You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Today is a sad day. Millions of Tumblr porn blogs perished yesterday as Tumblr's ban on adult content went into effect on Monday. This won't be a problem for people looking for porn online. You can still find porn on the internet. I checked. No, Tumblr's ban on adult content is sad, and it's a problem, a real cause for mourning, because a lot of people with minority sexual identities or niche sexual interests sought and found communities on Tumblr. And a lot of sex workers sought and found community and some measure of safety on Tumblr. We'll have more on the depressing Tumblr news next week. Like I said, today's a sad day for sexual expression and a sad day for a free and open internet. But for some listeners out there, it is shaping up to be a sad week. And that's what I want to talk about today. Christmas is coming. And this year, like every year, the media is force-feeding us idealized images of what Christmas is supposed to look like. Loving families gathering together to give each other cars, to talk, hug, reconcile, and carbo-load themselves into comas. But not everyone gets a car for Christmas. Not everyone is going home for Christmas. And in some cases, it might be my fault. There are people out there, I'm told, who actually take my advice. And some of you have taken my advice on how to handle your homophobic families or your transphobic families or your polyphobic families. Give them a year. Give them a year to ask whatever asshole questions they need to ask, no matter how offensive, a year to have their tantrums and their meltdowns. But when that year is up, if they haven't made any progress, if they're still being assholes about your sexuality or your gender identity or your partners, plural, if they're awful to you every time you see them or get on the phone, don't see them or get on the phone. Stop phoning home. Stop going home. Stop going home for Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Diwali or Ramadan or Thanksgiving. Because once you're an adult, your presence is your only leverage over your parents and your siblings and your aunts and your uncles. And if they can't love you, if they refuse to accept you for who you are and who you love, they don't get to have you. They don't deserve you. We have, as the brilliant Armistead Maupin said, a biological family and a logical family. If you're lucky, your biological family is part of your logical family. But not everyone is so lucky. Some of us have no choice but to cut our biological families out of our lives. And not everyone with toxic, hateful bios manages to find their logical family before they have to cut those toxic, hateful bios out of their lives. I have some advice for those of you who find yourselves between biological and logical families this Christmas, for those of you who are going to be alone at Christmas. It's a little counterintuitive, and it's not an assignment. If you don't think this would work for you, don't do it. It's advice, not binding arbitration. But if it looks like you're going to be alone this Christmas, if you're going to have a depressing Christmas, you might want to lean into it, as someone once said about something else entirely. Lean into that shit. With a little effort, you can have not a depressing Christmas, but the most cosmically, comically depressing Christmas ever. An epically, absurdly depressing Christmas. Not a shit Christmas, the shittiest Christmas. Now, I love Christmas, and I am lucky in that my biological family is now, didn't always feel like they were, but they are now a part of my logical family. But once, years ago, when I was still out there trying to find my logicals, I was alone on Christmas, alone and far away. Circumstances conspired to dump me in Dublin, and I had nowhere to go and no one to go nowhere with. I didn't have enough money to cobble together a Christmassy meal in a restaurant, and almost everything was closed anyway. And it was wet, and I was cold. Walking around downtown Dublin, I found the one place that was open on Christmas, a rundown movie theater. And what was showing? It wasn't Miracle on 34th Street. Nope. Nightmare on Elm Street. I bought a ticket and sat in the back row of a theater where people could smoke and were smoking, and I felt so fucking sorry for myself. And about halfway through the movie, after having a little sob, I started to laugh. The incongruity of it all. Watching a young and beautiful Johnny Depp get dismembered by a killer mattress, it suddenly made my sad-ass Christmas a little brighter. I left that theater after sitting through that movie twice. Still bummed about my shitty Christmas, shittiest Christmas, most depressing Christmas ever, before or since, but I was able to laugh about it. You have other options, of course. You could volunteer in a soup kitchen, you could head to a Chinese restaurant and hang out on Christmas with the Jews. But when you think something is going to suck, when you think something is going to be sad, I found that avoiding the suck or trying to paper over the suck can make the suck worse, but pumping the suck up, leaning into it, like I said, that can make the suck so absurd that you have to laugh. And then next year, when you found a few of your logicals, you'll have a story to tell. Your worst Christmas ever. And the other people around the table, other members of your logical family, maybe if you're lucky, a bio or two, they'll have their own stories to tell too. All right, coming up on today's show, Erica Moen joins us on the Micro and Magnum editions of the Savage Lovecast. Erica is the cartoonist half of the team behind the weekly comic Oh Joy Sex Toy, along with her husband, Matthew Nolan, and they have a new book out, Drawn to Sex, The Basics. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Rothy's, everyday flat shoes for women and girls, machine washable and made from recycled plastic bottles. For free shipping, go to rothys.com and enter Savage.
Hi, I am a 30-year-old woman living in San Francisco, and I'm newly dating a guy who doesn't wear deodorant because he thinks he doesn't need it. And the truth is, he really does, and it's actually very distracting when we are intimate with each other. And I'm not really sure how to approach it. Should I tell him that he needs deodorant? Should I buy him? Should I not say? I don't want to body shame him. So I'm really confused about what to do.
Yeah, you don't want to body shame him, but you don't want to let him get away with nose assaulting you. You have a right to go to him and say, yeah, you're wrong. I don't need deodorant. No. You do need deodorant. You don't need deodorant as often as the evil people who create deodorant ads might lead you to believe you need deodorant. Don't need it every goddamn day. But every once in a while, to murder the bacteria that might be growing and metastasizing into man stank. Yeah, every once in a while, you need to run something through your pits to take care of that. And you should say that to him. He wants to press his body up against yours. And you can't dictate to him anything about his body, right? Yeah, he wants to press his body up against yours. It's his body. He can do with it what he likes. Your body and your face and your nose and your olfactory senses, those are yours. And you can do with them what you like. And he would like you to press your body up against his body. And you have a right then to say, to dictate some terms. I will press my body up against your body when it is clean. I will put your dick in my mouth when it doesn't smell. Go take a shower. We can have sex tonight if you use some deodorant this morning, because you know what? You kind of reek. And you just have to say that to him. And if he breaks up with you, good riddance to stank rubbish.
Hi, Dan. I've been listening to your show forever, and I'm a big fan. And I think I have maybe the most obvious question ever. I'm still super hung up on my ex. We broke up close to 10 years ago. I've since married, moved on in a low point of staying married and staying sane. I reconnected with my ex recently. So I want to know how I get over that, I guess. Time hasn't done it for me. What do I do? Dan, help me.
I want to say that anyone who's ever dated, seriously dated, more than one person has regrets. But every day I get emails and letters from people who've only ever dated one person. And guess what they have? Regrets. They wonder what it might be like to have been with someone else, and not just sexually, to have been in a relationship with someone else. And sometimes they fantasize about what it might be like to be in a relationship with an imaginary partner, as opposed to the person that they've been with their entire lives, who isn't imaginary and comes bundled with the grind and stress of daily life, that comes bundled with the strain and conflict built into any long-term even loving, low conflict, romantic and sexual relationship. But it's not just people who've only ever been with one person in their entire lives who carry around in their heads an imaginary partner, the person with whom everything is easy and perfect because they're imaginary. People who've dated and had serious relationships with other people sometimes cast a long ago, far away ex as that imaginary partner with whom everything is easy and perfect because what was bad about the relationship, the reason you left the relationship, the 100 million little things about that person that annoyed you at the time or would have come to annoy you over time if you cohabitated with that person and shared the stress and grind of daily life with that person. None of that exists in your imagination when you fantasize about this guy from 10 years ago and the alternate life you might have had with that person had you wound up with that person. But you're with the person that you're with now. And if you want the relationship you're in now to survive and thrive, you need to reason with yourself. You need to talk yourself down off that ledge. You need to remind yourself of the reasons why that relationship 10 years ago ended. And then you need to tell yourself that there would be things about this person if you were with them now, with them still, and would make them the person that you look at and occasionally in frustration or just out of boredom, fantasize about the other, the alternative, the life you could have had, the different life. It is a ledge that you can talk yourself off of pretty easily if you're just a little logical and a little rational, that when your reptile brain kicks in, it begins to fantasize and sexually fantasize about this other person, your imaginary perfect partner, a role you have cast with a non-imaginary person. But at this stage, 10 years on, pretty much this person exists primarily in your imagination. Things with that person would not be perfect. Your higher brain needs to come in and talk to your reptile brain and go, yeah, I get what you're doing. I see what you're doing there. We all need to have our fantasies. We all sometimes want to indulge in this way. But higher brain is here to remind you that boyfriend from 10 years ago, farts too. Boyfriend from 10 years ago has annoying personal habits. Boyfriend from 10 years ago may have debts or issues or problems that would drive you up the fucking wall or are similar to the ones about the person you're with now that drive you up the fucking wall. Again, these are the things you do if you don't want to get out of the relationship that you're in now. These are the things you tell yourself so you can have the relationship you're in now with the non-imaginary husband and also the occasional daydream about what could have been with the imaginary partner that you, as a previously partnered person before the partner you're with now, have cast an actual human being in that role of imaginary partner, but he is still an imaginary partner. Who's sleeping in your bed? All right, none of my business, unless you call the show, in which case it becomes my business. But I can tell you this, you want the people sleeping and doing other things in your bed to be as comfortable as possible, to want to come back to your bed as often as they're invited, which is why you want Boll & Branch sheets. Everything Boll & Branch makes from bedding to blankets is made from pure 100% organic cotton, which means their products start out super soft and get even softer over time. You buy directly from them, so you're essentially paying wholesale prices. Luxury sheets can cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everyone who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands and thousands of five-star reviews. Boll & Branch only uses sustainable and responsible methods of sourcing and manufacturing, and they donate a portion of every sale to a charity that helps fight human trafficking while preserving fair prices for consumers. And new sheets are arguably the best gift imaginable. Wouldn't you want someone you sleep with to give you new beautiful sheets? So do it for them and for yourself for those nights that you sleep over at their place. Shipping is free, and you can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, you can send them back for a refund, but I doubt that you'll want to send them back still. There is no risk, therefore no reason not to give Boll & Branch a try. To get started, right now my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com when you use the promo code SAVAGE. That's B-O-L-L and branch.com, promo code SAVAGE. bollandbranch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I need advice on how to talk to a close friend who's likely guilty of sexually assaulting a couple friends in our community. We were both raised in a pseudo-Christian cult that psychologically abused us badly, so we didn't learn healthy interpersonal boundaries, let alone anything about dating, sex, or consent. Do I believe in part to bad examples, bad bad training, no training, a lack of options, and really bad judgment. My friend made a habit in his early 20s of getting involved with underage girls. This would have been about 10 years ago. I'm now hearing that several of them feel they were assaulted, and I believe them. Our community of friends who are still in touch after leaving the cult is understandably turning against him. This guy is essentially a brother to me. I love him, despite his deep, deep problems around sex. He's burned bridges with others who've confronted him about all this. I want to let him know that I can't be a friend to him if he continues to ignore what he did. I'm not sure how to confront him, what expectations to set around how he responds, or how to help him without alienating the rest of our friend group. Do you have any ideas?
If your friend can't take responsibility for the things that he's done, if he reacts defensively, if he reacts angrily when others confront him, and hopefully when you have confronted him about these things, you may have to cut him out of your life. He may be irredeemable. Perhaps because he's damaged, irredeemably damaged. You give context here that gives context but is not an excuse, that doesn't earn him a pass. That he was victimized in the cult in which he and you were both raised doesn't give him license to rattle around for the rest of his life abusing others. And he, again, has to take responsibility for his actions, for his bad actions, for his crime, for his perhaps criminal actions. And if he does, if he is willing to do that work, if he can recognize the terrible things that he has done and attempt to make amends and better himself so that he does not harm anyone in future, and you want then to be in his life, what do you say to the other people that you know, the other formerly mutual friends who are now just your friends who've cut him out of their lives and have a right to do that? Even if he gets into therapy, even if he takes responsibility, even if he attempts to make amends, the people that he has harmed have a right to cut him out of their lives. But if you don't want to cut him out of your life, what do you say to people that you know who have? Well, you say you didn't give him a pass. You say that you are remaining in his life in part, perhaps in large part, to help hold him accountable, that it is not a great idea for the safety of others that he may encounter in future, for there to be no one beside him, no one in his life who knows him and knows what he's capable of, knows the damage he's capable of inflicting on others, the harm he's capable of doing, and is standing there beside him saying, do better. And my presence in your life is conditional upon, of course, you being and doing better. I know that in a lot of Christian traditions, a lot of evangelical churches, there are accountability buddies around masturbating and idiotic things like that, or looking at pornography, and you have an accountability buddy that you phone, then I guess slaps the dick out of your hand if you're about to masturbate to the porn you just watched on your phone, and then slaps your phone out of the other hand. You can be an accountability presence in his life. Not perhaps an accountability buddy, I think that's a little too cutesy in a case like this, but you can be a person in his life, an anchor in his life that helps ground him and helps to hold him accountable and helps and encourages him to hold himself accountable. But you can't give him a pass. If he won't hear you when you confront him about the shitty things that he's done, if he just wants to have the good of you in his life, or wants to feel like maybe everything he did wasn't so awful because you're still willing just to hang out and shoot the shit or watch the game or go to the movies or whatever, then you're complicit in his rationalizations that may lead to him abusing others in future, and you can't be complicit. So hold him accountable. If he refuses to be held accountable, cut him out of your life. Thanks to Rothy's for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Rothy's are super stylish, comfortable flats for women and girls. Nancy went apeshit for hers. Why? Because they are made from recycled plastic, and Nancy won't shut up about how much she hates all that plastic in the ocean. Plastic doesn't belong in the ocean. Plastic belongs on Nancy's feet. Seriously, these are gorgeous, comfortable shoes and would make the ideal gift for the sensitive and fashionable environmentalist on your list. And listen to this. When they've run their course, you can send them back to Rothy's for free to be recycled again as yoga mats, outsoles, and other environmentally friendly products. 85% of shoes end up in landfills. Some end up floating around in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch in the ocean, but not Rothy's, the shoe that keeps on giving back to the environment. Also, they're machine washable. They come in four styles, the flat, the point, the loafer, and the sneaker. The color and pattern selections are amazing, and they're always updating their lineup. They launch new colors every few weeks and sell out constantly. Nancy got the loafer in mocha. You have to check these shoes out. And then you're going to want to give a pair to every woman you know. Right now, Rothy's has an amazing deal for my listeners. Use the code SAVAGE to get free shipping with no minimum. Free shipping and free returns exchanges on your Rothy's shoes. And trust Nancy when she says you're really not going to want to return them. Go to Rothy's.com, Rothys.com, and enter SAVAGE to get your amazing shoes and free shipping. No brainer. Shoes that are comfortable, stylish, and sustainable. And free shipping. Did I mention the free shipping? Free shipping. Give the gift she will thank you for, one step at a time. Rothy's.com, promo code SAVAGE. Get this deal while it lasts.
Hi, Dan. Cis, straight, mid-30s male from a large-ish Australian city here, calling for... Well, first time, long time. I'm in a long-term monogamous relationship, and my girlfriend recently brought up Doherty's sex style, which she called it, with her on all fours, me positioned behind her and entering her vaginally from behind. My concern is, how did she find out about this now and the fact that she likes it after almost 15 years of us just having sex in the normal position? We have a very trusting and open relationship and can talk about these sort of things well. So when she says that she didn't learn about this through an affair with another man, I believe her, and leaves viewing online porno videos or talking about our sex life with other people as the only other ways that she may have learned about this. The former I consider cheating, and the latter I'm not really comfortable with. So my question is, are there any other ways that you could suggest that she may have learned about this position? And can you suggest any ways that I can bring up this topic and the fact that I've had to fake my orgasm each time that she's asked for Doherty without sounding like I'm kink shaming, which I don't want to do, but I do want to find a way to get past this because she's probably the love of my life. Keep up the great show. I enjoy your show week to week.
Doherty style.
I wanted to bring you in because we were just debating whether or not this is a fake call.
We are so torn. We've listened to this call like five times, and it's one of my favorite calls of all time.
This, if it's a fake, he's a good actor.
Yeah.
He sells it.
Yeah, totally. The waver in his voice. The bizarre use of a slang that doesn't seem to be real, Doherty style. Hey, Australians, is that a thing?
No.
I don't think it's a thing.
We did a little Googling. I texted a friend in Australia. Nobody calls it Doherty style. And I can't imagine someone who's a longtime listener to this show. Not that you really hear people use the expression doggy style very often. It's just like sex. It's just it's a common position.
It's common and vanilla. It's like a freaky, kinky...
No, it's not like something only people who've watched pornography could possibly know about, like spitting into someone's mouth. But
that's a good idea.
This
is
sex that people have. And people, even people who are virgins, who have never watched porn and never spoken to a friend, are familiar with this position. If by only actually seeing dogs do it in the street.
Yeah. So is he an actor? So he's either the best actor or the worst person.
The worst straight guy.
Worst straight guy.
Controlling, paranoid, vindictive, possessive straight guy. The worst one. And that's a high bar, sir, if you actually exist, if this isn't a fake. Being the worst straight guy, the worst boyfriend, that bar is so fucking high the International Space Station barely clears it.
So let's proceed as though this person's real. And let's also like beg the listeners that this is not a challenge. Please don't try and call in with your fake questions. I'm pretty sure that I catch them all, but please don't try to trick us.
Yeah. Not that we lose too much sleep over it. I don't, because if it's a good fake question, you know, every question is a hypothetical to every listener but one. So if the rare fake slips through, that's fine. But like the obvious fakes. And what makes this – if he was chortling or there was any sense in his reading or the asking of the question that he was amused by it, then it would obviously – we would go, oh, fake, and just discard it. But he sounds so fucking sincere.
Yeah, and he's really worried that his girlfriend might be
– watching pornography.
Or talking to her friends or having an affair.
Well, he ruled out affair. He believes that she hasn't cheated on him. But the idea that you could be – he says – one of the things he says, and he sounds like he means it, is longtime listener. And the idea that you could be a longtime listener to this show and regard glimpsing at pornography long enough to find out about this doggy style position that everybody already fucking knows about and regard that as cheating, that doesn't seem credible.
It's incomprehensible.
And that you could be a longtime listener to the show. There are a lot of people out there who have this attitude, right, that you shouldn't talk about us with your friends. And that is actually kind of a controlling behavior, and it's not fair and it's not right, because we have to be able to confide not in gossips, not in just any asshole, in trusted friends about our relationships, including about the sex lives, the sex we have in the context of our relationship, because sometimes we need to be told we're being used or abused or badly treated, and sometimes we need to vent. So the idea that a longtime listener, not just some asshole on the street, because I think there's a lot of assholes on the street who take that position, don't talk about our business with anybody, but some longtime listener to this show would regard chatting with a friend about your sex life and finding out from this friend that there's not just one position that you can actually do this vaginal intercourse thing in another configuration.
Jeannie, I've got to tell you about this new position. It's called doggy style.
Sometimes doggedy, most often doggy. Yeah, that also just seems not credible.
Yeah. All right. So are we just not proceeding as though it's real? Like we're just going ahead like it's fake?
No. Okay, it's real. Sir, you're an asshole. And you need to apologize to your girlfriend. And you need to stop lying to your sex advice podcasters about the kind of relationship you have. You say it's an open and honest relationship, nope. And yet you can't ask your girlfriend where this idea came from. It probably came from, again, if this is real, she's bored. 15 fucking years of getting fucked in the exact same position, she's bored. Or maybe you grew a beard and she doesn't want to look at your face anymore during sex. That could also happen.
Maybe we should tell him about some other positions that they could do. Blow his mind.
Reverse cowgirl. Wheelbarrow. And you listen to the show. What if your girlfriend listens to the show and heard about a sex position? Like, sex is something that people talk about, even if they don't talk with their friends about it. It is a topic of conversation. It's covered in magazines. Maybe she read it in Cosmo. Is she not allowed to read Cosmo either? Not allowed to Google sex or sex positions and look through the results that she might get?
So she's allowed to talk to her friends about sex. She's allowed to watch some pornography to learn about sex. And she's allowed to ask for whatever sex position she wants. And you, as her longtime boyfriend, you have to at least have an open mind to what she's proposing and go for it. And
she's not – she didn't ask you to lay down so she could shit in your mouth. Just for doggy style.
It's a slippery slope, Dan.
Yeah. It's a hop, skip, and a jump from doggy style to shitting down my throat.
All right. So take it easy, Lee Strasberg.
All right. If you're a fake, well done, bravo. We entertained your fake. If you exist, boo, hiss.
Boo.
You have got to be a better human being and better boyfriend than your call reveals you to be. You have got to work on the person that you are, and you have got to let your girlfriend be the autonomous individual with a right to a zone of privacy that might include watching a little pornography, which might include chatting with a trusted friend about her sex life, including her frustrations about her sex life, and then coming back to you from that conversation with a suggestion from that friend that improves your sex life. You should be grateful, not angry. Dude, stop being a listener, but stop being an asshole if you're a listener at all. Again, hard to square a longtime listener with the premise of this question.
Hi, Dan. I'm wondering if there are strap-ons that work on a man, so when the man doesn't feel like, you know, having sex, then he can put on a strap-on and still have sex.
Joining me by phone from her secret lair in Portland, Oregon, Erica Moen is the cartoonist half of the team behind the weekly comic Oh Joy Sex Toy, which she works on along with her husband, Matthew Nolan, and they have a new book out, Drawn to Sex, The Basics. Really quickly, let's talk about the book first, if that's all right. How are you doing, Erica?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good, good. Revving up for the Christmas Xmas season. Quickly, let's talk about the book.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I get asked all the time whether I'm going to do a book for teenagers or young adults or tweens about sex, and I'm really happy about Drawn to Sex, which I read this weekend, because now I don't have to write that book because you wrote that book.
Oh, wow. That's that means a lot. Thank you.
It's a really terrific primer. I never know how to pronounce that word. Really terrific intro. What inspired you to do a book, not just for young people, but for beginners of all ages?
Because we all are beginners at some point. And even like, you know, when you're well into your decades, like you're still going to be a beginner at something. So I just, it comes from back when I was first learning about sex. And as I continue to learn about sex as a 35-year-old, and just really wishing I had a really friendly place that would kindly explain how things work and be really accessible, like with drawings, because I remember when I was learning about sex, I would hear descriptions of stuff and I could not imagine how body parts fit together or how these sex toys worked this way or that way. And so having an illustrated guide that like there's no questions, you know, you look at this and you see exactly how it's working and how things go and where. And so whether you're in your teen years or whether you're 40, like there's always something that you don't actually know about yet. And there's some newfangled sex toy that you're like, I don't even comprehend how you start to use this. And it's like, oh, look here, it's drawn. You can see it.
So who were the readers that you were thinking about as you guys worked on this book? I know that when I work on a book, I usually have a reader in my head that I'm addressing. Who were you addressing?
Well, okay. I was kind of thinking people who are beginning to learn about sex. And in my head, like I'm more comfortable saying late teenagers because I don't know what the ethics are of like giving younger teenagers a book of explicitly drawn sex. So in my head, they're more like 17, 18 and onwards.
Erica, yeah. You know that platform on which you publish your work where you can find OJ Sex
yes.
Toy, the internet?
Yeah. 15, oh, I have no control. 15-year-olds
have access to the internet and all the pornography on it. I think you can safely say that this book is appropriate for 13-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds, 16-year-olds. And it's a great bit of counter-programming or complicating programming for a young teenager or tween who's already watching internet pornography on their phones.
Yep. No, fair enough. Fair enough.
Okay, for parents out there listening who might be thinking about ordering Drawn to Sex, The Basics, and of course at Savage Lovecast, parents are the best and most progressive, sex-positive parents in the world. What does it cover? You know, your comic, if you go look at Oh Joy Sex Toy, you'll talk about bondage and piss play and cuckolding. Mm-hmm. You talk about and write about and draw about and invite other artists and cartoonists and writers to write about and draw about every different form of sexual identity, gender expression, sexual interest, kink. Mm-hmm. What are they going to find in the book when you hand that book to a 15-year-old?
Okay, well, so we cover kind of some of the basic stuff, like this is how a penis works, this is how a vulva works, this is how conception stuff works. But then we also, we talk a lot about birth control. And then we really tried to go into the pleasure of sexual activity and not just like with fucking somebody else, but just like on your own and getting to know your own body. And we also do, like, we really try to make an emphasis of saying, also, you don't have to be sexual. If you're not feeling it yet, like you do not have to do anything you don't want to do, whether that's right now or for the rest of your life. And we would talk about like the sexual response cycle, sexual fantasies, and, you know, stuff that just gets you used to thinking about how your specific body is going to function, whether you're solo or whether you're partnered up. And then we explain how to be sexually intimate with other people. And, you know, of course there's obviously like, penis and vagina penetration, but we include everything else, like mutual masturbation and annual sex and oral sex and anal sex.
And queer sex.
And sex toys. And queer, well, yeah, like the whole book is pretty queer. It's not very, it's not super hetero-focused. We really try to avoid gendered language. So we're just talking about people who have different types of bodies. So we've got people with vulvas and how they can use their bodies and their vulvas this way and that way. And then we've got people with penises and how they can use their bodies this way and that way. And like different ways you can team up regardless of what genitalia you have. So it's definitely like, I think the book is very, very queer.
I think so too. I loved it. And full disclosure, I'm one of the people that you dedicated the book to, which came as a real shock to me when I opened it
yeah.
up. And thank you for that.
Aww.
But I recommend it. If you're a parent out there listening, and or you're one of those parents who writes me every once in a while imploring me to do a kind of a sex guide or how-to or manual for teenagers and post-pubescent kids, stop asking me to write that book, because Erica and her husband Matthew Nolan have written that book, Drawn to Sex, The Basics. All right, let's talk about the question. So,
Oh, right.
What is there a strap-on that a man can strap on when he doesn't want to have sex? So that he can have the sex he doesn't want to have. It's kind of a conundrum, kind of a paradox. He doesn't want to have sex. I think what she means is he can't get hard or just isn't horny right now, but is willing to basically sexually engage, to have sex with his partner. She would like, or he would like, to be penetrated. Are there strap-ons that penis-having people can strap on over their penises?
Yes, the answer is yes. And I also want to add another scenario in which that might come up, is that maybe they were fucking and the guy came and like now he's spent, but he's still like, he's still game. He still wants to go some more. But so the answer is yes. Personally, I don't actually have personal experience with this, neither does my husband. So I had to do a little bit of internet research. And what I found is Early to Bed, which is early2bed.com. has a harness called the Vibe Harness. It's $50 and it's vegan friendly. And yeah, I think it's a regular harness, meaning like it's typically made for people who don't actually have a penis. But if you have a penis, you can, there's space to shuffle aside and tuck things over. And yeah, you just strap on a regular old dildo and then you can go to town. And then over on, what was it? Oh, goodvibes.com. I found one called Spare Parts Deuce Male Harness. And Early to Bed really keeps gender neutral language. So regardless, like if you have a penis, it doesn't say like, man, it just is like for your penis. Over here on the, for the Spare Parts Deuce Male Harness, like it very much is like, this is for men. And it very specifically is designed to hold a bio dick kind of out of the way, although in a pleasurable way. It says the little thing that holds the bio dick, it has, acts as like a soft cock ring. Mm. Anyway, and yeah, you plug in a regular old dildo in the regular old spot, and then you go to town on that.
There's also strap-ons that you can strap on your forehead. There are gags, if you're into BDSM, that have a dildo that protrude from them. There are strap-on to your thigh strap-ons, which is a dildo attached basically to a Velcro strap that you wrap around your thigh. You have lots of options for sex toys. But if what you want to recreate is, you know, standard issue penetrative sex, sort of, kind of, with a strap-on, you know, missionary position or some other position, maybe that doggedy style position the kids are talking about these days, you can do that with a strap-on. And you do see a lot of that. You know, I listened to this question and I immediately wanted to call you, partly so we could talk about Drawn to Sex and then just knock this question out really simply and easily and quickly, because it's kind of a simple, easy question. But you will see porn out there that features more guys wearing strap-ons, sometimes in a sort of a chastity situation where the guy's wearing a cock cage and so he's not allowed to use his dick, but the partner wants to be dicked, so they're using a strap-on dick. But there are also people out there, and credit to them, I used to say this years ago and I'd get a lot of hand-wringing, grief, tear-stained emails, which I didn't think was possible, but write about this and you'll see that a tear-stained email is a possible thing, suggesting to guys who are insecure about their size or who know that their partners have been with people who are bigger and their partners sometimes miss that like crazy filled up feeling, that you can provide that feeling to your partner, whatever your size is, if you strap on the biggest possible penis available to you, which is the penis from the penis store.
Yeah. Well, and also like there are hollow dildos that are designed for somebody with a cock to put their physical cock inside of it. And then they're just like their penis extenders. Although I do want to make sure that when people go looking for that, get silicone dildos. Do not get PVC or jelly rubber. Those are not good for your body. Don't do that.
Right. They've got terrible chemicals in them that are bad for sensitive skin, and there's a lot of sensitive skin on your dick. Those are called, I've heard those called cock sheaths. And you wear them over your cock. Sometimes they have a cock ring attachment that kind of goes around the base and the balls to really anchor that. And that can be an effective sort of harness-free way, if you can stay hard inside that cock sheath, if that's arousing to you to wear the cock sheath, to provide your partner with that, oh my God, giant-dicked feeling that some people enjoy and that people can, regardless of size, provide their partners with, so long as they don't look at a toy that's a little bigger than them and have a meltdown about it.
Well, and also I want to bring up, you can just hold the dildo in your hand and fuck your partner. That's delightful. I don't know if TMI or what, but my husband and I will do that pretty regularly, where he just fucks me with a dildo using his hand, and it's a great time.
In our gig economy, you could probably get online and pay somebody to do that for you if you don't want to hold the dildo. There's also suction cup dildos that you can attach to the wall of your shower. There are so many dildo options out there. Get online and learn more about them. And one place you can learn about all the sex toy options and dildo options and harness options and sheath options available to you, ohjoysextoy.com. Erica Moen and Matthew Nolan's terrific, educational, entertaining sex ed site. I call you a sex ed site. Is that okay? I'm always referring to what you do as sex ed.
Oh, yeah. Us too. We review sex toys because that pays the bills, and also because we love sex toys. But when we made the site, and very much the heart and soul of the site is sex ed.
And Drawn to Sex, The Basics, is a terrific sex ed book for people who are new to sex, regardless of age. Thank you for coming on, Erica Moen. It's always great talking with you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Hi, Dana, the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I am a 24-year-old heteroflexible woman in the Midwest. Went out with a guy a couple times, really hit it off, and then we slept together. 2 days later, he texted me and said that he liked me, but he can't have sex with me again, and I, quote, hope you don't hate me anymore. I guess we're 12 years old again. I was okay with that. I was okay with maintaining a friendship because he was a nice guy. And then the next day he asked me if I wanted to go out with him and his best friend because we'd, quote, really hit it off. Now I'm just ticked off because I feel like he's just trying to fucking pass me around like a sex doll. Is he even worth the energy of calling out, or do I just ignore him for the rest of eternity? Thanks, Dan.
I have a friend that I think you would really hit it off with. I think you guys would be great together. I think that's something an ex could say to you 2 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later. If it was a good relationship and you parted amicably and it was a low conflict relationship and, it wasn't abusive, that there was no furious anger bomb reason why you two couldn't be together, and this person regards you with affection and you regard that ex with affection and your friends, that's somebody who knows you intimately, knows kind of what you might be looking for or might need in a romantic relationship because they weren't it. But they saw what it is you needed. They saw what it is you might want. And they know someone who they think is what you need and is what you want. An ex can be a great wingman. An ex can be a great yenta. An ex who really knows you and still loves you on some level can be a great matchmaker. That's not this guy, though. He's not an ex. You guys were never in love. You hung out a couple of times. You fucked once. He informed you after that one time that he won't be fucking you anymore. You were willing to stay friendly to see if you couldn't have a friendship with this person that you'd have this hookup. And then he calls you and says, hey, I got a friend. I'm going to hook you up. I think you two would really get along. You'd really hit it off. Yeah, that's not something you say to someone you fucked once. That does smack of being passed off, passed around like a baton. And you're right to not want to meet his friend. And you're right to, I think, not want to be his friend. But your question is, do you call him up and give him a piece of your mind? Do you text him and blow up at him? Or do you just walk the fuck away? And I think the latter. I think you walk the fuck away. Not only doesn't he deserve your friendship, he doesn't deserve any more of your time or your attention or your mental energy. So you can block him, which might cause him to wonder what that's about. There's slight aggression in blocking someone. It's kind of a passive-aggressive act. Or you can just ignore it and ignore him. And that's what I would go with. I would just not dignify the offer of your ass to his friend with a response. All right, before we get to your feedback calls, a few of your feedback tweets. Stella tweets, listening to the Savage Lovecast, I have two main thoughts. One, I am so lucky to be a teacher in a country where I can tell my students the truth about sex. And two, listening to Dan Savage weekly has made me saner and smarter about sex and thus better at talking to my students. Thank you very much, Stella. Bo tweets, what a pleasure hearing Stormy Daniels field a few questions with fake Dan Savage on a recent Savage Lovecast. Both are sex positive heroes of mine. She's just as brilliant as I suspected. The tweets about Stormy's appearance on the Lovecast keep pouring in, and we are going to try to get her back. And Jen tweets, at fake Dan Savage, now that you're reading tweets on hashtag Savage Lovecast, please, please throw in a few of the hateful ones you get so we can all laugh at the Santorums of this Trumpy country together. All right, next week for the Christmas show, I'll only read hater tweets, and we'll see how that goes. If you want me to read your tweets, hateful or otherwise, on a future episode of Savage Lovecast, remember to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now some more of your calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to the woman whose boyfriend or husband wants her to swallow his load every time she gives him a blowjob. For one, that is fucking stupid. No, you do not have to do that. But also, I am not a cum fan. I don't even like cum on my own body, let alone anybody else's. I have a very difficult time swallowing, and I've only been able to do it once. And the only way it worked out, I was lying on my back, and I was kind of getting my face fucked, in a way we can say. But this way, when my boyfriend came, I didn't even have to swallow. Gravity just took it down, and it stayed down. That's the only time I've been able to swallow. If I try to swallow vertically, or upright, it doesn't work. The actual act of me swallowing the load, I want to hurl. Gross. Anyway, see if that helps, if you really want to swallow it. But no, you don't have to fucking swallow his load. What a rude-ass motherfucker.
Hi, Dan. This is for the woman in episode 633 whose mom is questioning the Black Lives Matter movement. I would suggest her mom look up Santoya Brown, who was 16 when she killed a kidnapper and rapist and serving 51 years for defending herself, all while Brock Turner is roaming free right now. Also, Marissa Alexander, who shot at a man who threatened to kill her whole family, and she got 20 years in a stand your ground state. Also, you can ask her how many times in high school the police stopped and dumped her bag on the street because she supposedly looked like an adult suspect. Because I can count at least twice a month. You can ask her how much subpar emergency medical care she got because doctors assumed her pain threshold was much higher than others. Because I had a broken ankle one time, treated with a splint instead of a cast. And I still have a weird thing with my ankle to this day. You can also ask her how many times her classmates told her that she couldn't play Spider-Man because she was a nigger and Spider-Man was white. Because that happened at age 4 for me, and the teacher just kind of shrugged it off as it was cute or funny. Ask her how many times a bartender called her a nigger multiple times and then kicked all of the white people out of the bar who didn't know each other while the owner watched. Because that just happened this past Sunday. And don't even get me started with redlining or the birth of gynecology or the Tuskegee experiment. Like, all these things are why Black Lives Matter exists, because we keep being told that we don't matter.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and squad. It's me, a black listener, calling in response to the woman in episode 633 who wanted to explain the movement to her folks. Dan, your explanation was great as far as I'm concerned. But if we're dealing with the kind of audience that we really need to simplify for, let's take it to the animal kingdom. Now, you might hear folks talking about save the whales, save the rhinos, save the tigers, but you don't much hear them talk about save the ducks, save the horses, save the golden retrievers, right? Do these people not care about ducks, horses, and golden retrievers? Do they want them to go extinct? No. It's that ducks, horses, and golden retrievers aren't being unjustifiably killed at an alarming rate like whales, rhinos, and tigers. Get it? Holla!
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Last month, folks in Seattle, Portland, and San Francisco were lucky enough to catch the opening weekends of the 14th annual Hump Film Festival, where audiences got to enjoy 21 new dirty short films and voted for their favorites. Now Hump is going on the road. The Hump Spring Tour will be starting in late January 2019. Find a city near you and grab some tickets for what I think is the best Hump ever at humpfilmfest.com. It's not too late to gift the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast to the Savage Lovecast listeners. On your list, go to savagelovecast.com and click on the gray box that says gift. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Erica Moen on Twitter at Erica with a K, Moen, M-O-E-N. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech savvy at risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.